I try to help people think about what's going on and organize their lives accordingly. Millions of dollars as a sign of pure affection. Millions more for helping people think about their lives. By this logic, politicians who raise millions of dollars a year must be the most beloved people in America and the most charitable. The reality is that most of what happens in American politics is transactional. People look for ways to influence those in power by throwing money in their direction. Politicians are all too happy to vacuum up contributions from supporters and people who want access or something in return. After politicians leave office, they often trade on their relationships and previous positions to enrich themselves and their families. The law dictates how much politicians can collect in campaign contributions, limits their ability to make money on the side, and requires the disclosure of those contributors. Hopefully, politicians are also limited to some extent by their conscience. A sense of decency and good judgment ought to prevent politicians on both sides of the aisle from engaging in certain transactions, even if they think they can get away with it. But while there is ample debate about which transactions should be limited and how, there is near universal agreement that the game, however muddy, should be exclusively played by Americans. For this reason, it has long been illegal for foreigners to contribute to U.S. political campaigns. In 2012, two foreign nationals challenged the constitutionality of that law. The U.S. Supreme Court decided 9-0, declaring the law not only constitutional, but eminently reasonable. The Clintons, however, often take money from foreign entities, and that money, donated to the Clinton Foundation or paid in speaking fees, comes in amounts much larger than any campaign contribution. Indeed, the scope and extent of these payments are without precedent in American politics. As a result, the Clintons have become exceedingly wealthy. The big question is whether taking such money constitutes a transaction. The Clintons would undoubtedly argue that it does not. The evidence presented in this book suggests otherwise. Any serious journalist or investigator will tell you that proving corruption by a political figure is extremely difficult. Short of someone involved coming forward to give sworn testimony, we don't know what might or might not have been said in private conversations, the exact nature of a transaction, or why people in power make the decisions they do. This is why the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, sets up sting operations to catch suspected malefactors in the act. That is also why investigators look primarily at patterns of behavior. Imagine, for example, that you are exploring whether a politician is doing favors for a major campaign contributor in a manner that might be illegal. If investigators were to find that the timing of major campaign contributions occurred immediately before the politician made a highly favorable decision for the donor, and that this pattern could be well established, such timing would certainly warrant further investigation. This was precisely the approach I took in my 2011 book, Throw Them All Out, concerning stock trades and members of Congress. Were members of Congress engaged in insider trading in the stock market? I looked at both their stock trades and their official activities, such as voting on certain bills. I discovered that politicians from both parties had curious patterns in their stock picks, often buying and selling at opportune times. During the 2008 financial crisis, for example, some politicians sold stocks or shorted the market, bet that it would go lower, shortly after receiving secret economic briefings from senior government officials. Was this proof that insider trading had taken place? No. As I pointed out in the book, we could not know precisely why the politicians were making these particular trades at those particular times. But the patterns were highly suspicious. Shortly after the release of the book and a 60 Minutes segment on my findings, politicians from both parties cooperated in passing the Stock Act, which was designed to outlaw congressional insider trading. President Barack Obama condemned the practice during his 2012 State of the Union address and later signed the Stock Act into law. The law was subsequently gutted by Congress and the White House, but that's another story. I can proudly say that my findings were attacked by both Republicans and Democrats. In a legal sense, I could not prove that insider trading had taken place. I didn't know precisely the motivations at work when stocks were being traded, but the pattern and timing of those trades raised questions so troubling that even members of Congress could not ignore it. In 2013, I published a follow-up called Extortion, which argued